Afternoon. It's 12:07. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Midday Matters on WBOI. Thanks very much for being with us on this rather dreary Monday afternoon. We're glad you're tuned to our station, however. Today, with me as usual, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, how are you this afternoon?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Glad to be here.
Good. Well, we're glad to have you with us once again. This, of course, the news review edition of our program. And on today's show, we're talking about the 2013 Indiana General Assembly session so far. With us to help us tackle that task, it's a familiar voice, Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at IPFW. Andy, you have to shorten that title one of these days here. It's a mouthful.
Yeah, I know it is. I'm sorry about that. Well, thanks for having me.
thanks for making time for us this hour. With us by phone for the hour, Leonard Williams, a political science professor at Manchester University. Professor, thanks very much for joining us as well.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
And over the course of the hour, we're going to hear from a few of our local legislators here as well. We want you to get in touch with us. If you have a question or comment for the program today, 260-452-1185, toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Joining us by phone, it's we have with us Republican Martin Carbaugh representing the Fort Wayne area. Representative Carbaugh, can you hear us okay?
Yep, I can hear you just fine.
Well, thanks very much for being with us on the program today.
I appreciate you having me on a dreary day in Indy as well.
A dreary day. it sounds like we're all getting maybe some of that that much needed rain as we get towards planting season here. Representative Carbaugh, I know we only have you a few minutes, so we'll try to be quick with our questions. But I'll start off here. You know, this is your first session at the General Assembly. Let me just ask you. I mean, how are things going in your view? This is I know a lot of first time legislators. It's sometimes a monumental task just to get the feel of the place and how it runs.
Yeah, I would echo that. The first several weeks, just kind of figuring out the flow of things. I often describe it as semi-organized chaos. but it's going really well. I think the first portion of the session has not been without some disagreements with other legislators, but it's been very civil in tone, and I really appreciate that. Though I was not here, this isn't the first. I've followed the Indiana General Assembly and the news and know all about the last couple of years, and I think that we've made a real nice transition as a body to really work with folks across the aisle, or for me, up the aisle. Having 69 Republicans, I sit on the Democrat side of the House.
tell me a little more about that tone of civility, because we've come off of a few years where we've seen a lot of very strong disagreements, walkouts, things like that. This session, I think many observers would say, is going far more smoothly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've gotten to know other Republicans around the state that are elected, but also a lot of Democrats, and have been happy to work with many of the legislators on different bills. The one bill that I authored on the House side that's passed out 90-0, I'm pleased to say, I was able to get the support of all the Democrats and have a couple of Democrat co-authors on there as well, and look for it to move smoothly through the Senate as well. So, total 180 from everything I heard about the last couple of years. And I think that's definitely a concerted effort on both sides. I know that Speaker Bosma has made that a point in this session.
I think Andy Downs has a question.
Representative Carbaugh, congratulations on that one bill. Obviously, not all of your bills have been able to move out of the Chamber of Origin. What's your approach going to be for the second half of the session? Are you looking for some bills that you can maybe amend some of those items into, or are you going to be happy with the one bill and kind of continue to focus on that one?
Yeah, I think I've got a couple I'm sponsoring over on the or from the Senate over on the House side. I'm going to definitely actually just had a hearing today, fast-sided judiciary, homeowners covenants bill that came from a constituent of mine that I'm carrying for Senator Holdman. I'm going to concentrate on the ones that have made it. I definitely look forward to after session working on some things, maybe not all. Part of the issue with some of the bills, you know, you come down with ideas and then learn that there's other ways of fixing things, or maybe I just had a misconception coming down on particular issues. But you know, not disappointed at all in what happened in the first half as far as my bills that I had filed.
Do you think, as a rule, legislators really should be putting a lot of effort into the second half in terms of trying to amend portions of bills that did not pass into bills that did move out of the Chamber of Origin, or do you think that the process maybe should be respected in a little more linear fashion than that?
You know, I would say, Andy, that's probably kind of a case by case. I think there are, you know, there's obviously probably going to be examples, or there usually are examples of, you know, things that didn't happen, and so I'm going to try to get it in there and show them. I don't know of a lot of that happening this year, yet to be seen. You know, if it's a strong constituent issue and it's good for the state, I don't think continuing the conversation and seeing if we can find some consensus and getting it in yet this year is a bad thing.
Yeah, and as a lot of people recognize, there are so many things to be dealt with. You really can expect to have something good crop up in sort of the usual fashion, but sometimes that amendment process might be the way to go.
Right, exactly. Yep. You just got to be careful not to rub too bad in the wrong way if it's a definite defeated measure and you're just trying to get things done. You know, I don't foresee that happening anyway.
Bob Kaler.
Yeah, there's a strong grassroots lobbying effort that's emerged for backing Governor Pence's proposal for an income tax cut. Do you see that making any headway?
You know, I'm surprised I'm getting a question about the tax cut. I didn't think that was a big deal. You know, yet to be seen. I will tell you, everything that you hear out of Speaker Bosma is exactly where the caucus is at with it. We're open to discussions. I think when we start seeing revenue forecasts, the conversation is going to become more clear. Well, at least we hope it's going to become more clear. But it's not a dead deal. I haven't heard anybody say absolutely not. That's the worst thing ever. And I've heard some people in support. You know, grassroots efforts on every side of every issue are good things. It's good to know where people stand in the state and specifically in the district. I can tell you, I appreciate constituent contact, and it does help shape. You know, because representing 65,000 people, I can't possibly talk to all of them all at the same time, and not everybody has an opinion on every issue. But it's good to know issues from the people that are affected by these different issues. It's good to hear both sides of the story and the argument.
Representative, I know you're busy. We have to let you go in just a moment here. Let me ask you real quick, what's been the most just surprising thing that you've found in your short time so far in Indianapolis?
Well, that's the most common question I get. And, you know, the most surprising thing really has at first was just the disorganized or semi-organized chaos. I thought it'd be a little more coordinated. You know, a pleasant surprise is that really have not gotten any pressure to vote one way or the other from my own caucus. It's very, very strong on the Republican side that you're here to represent your area and you you vote the way that you feel your district needs. And there's not a strong arm bending that I've felt. And I think that's a really good thing. when I was knocking on doors and meeting constituents, I had a few that said, you know, they're going to take you, that literally had one tell me, they're going to take you in a room, they're going to tell you exactly what you got to do, and, you know, it just has been the exact opposite.
Well, I thank you very much for your time, Representative, and good luck in the rest of the session.
I appreciate it. Appreciate being on the show, and be happy to be back anytime.
We'll certainly check in as the weeks roll on here.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Martin Carbaugh is a Republican representing House District 81 here in northeastern Indiana. Thanks very much for him and his time. Andy Downs, let me ask you first. We've talked before about new folks coming into coming down to Indianapolis representing their districts. Is it a tough job? Is this a typical case, would you say?
It is a tough job. It's not easy. The process, you know, we all think we understand it, and then you actually find yourself there and you realize, well, I understood part of it, but not necessarily all of it. And even those who've been there for a while continue to find things out that or see something for the first time. And so it is an ongoing process. And, you know, we're lucky that there are people who are interested and willing to do it, because not all of us are.
And Leonard Williams, can you tell us a little bit? I mean, how long can it take for a new member to get some seniority, get some influence, get some power in Indianapolis, representing his district and his or her district and his or her region?
It generally takes another term or two. You want to get reelected to show that you have what it takes to please your constituents, return to Indianapolis, have some issues that you want to put forward as you do your work on committee, show that you have what it takes to not only get reelected, but to do the job of the legislature.
We're talking today about the 2013 Indiana legislative session so far. We're just over halfway through the session now, and we're talking with Andy Downs and Leonard Williams. We just spoke with Martin Carbaugh, of course, representing the 81st House District here in Indiana. We do need to take a quick break. When we return, we'll talk with Democrat Phil Giaquinta. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch with us this hour, 260-452-1185. Toll free, of course, at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
Scientists are creating pigs that can grow organs for human transplant, goats that produce valuable protein-rich milk, and also are altering mouse genes to trace genetic deformities.
There's a mouse that has tusks like an elephant might have.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Emily Anthes about her new book, Frankenstein's Cat, Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beasts. Join us.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week on American Roots, the funk soul universe from New Orleans to New York, including all things funky with Stanton Moore and Ben Elman from the band Galactic. Then East Harlem's king of Latin soul, Joe Batan. Plus music from Stevie Wonder, Dr. John, and Joe Cuba. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Advisa, helping businesses of all sizes improve hiring, leadership, strategy, and sales through data analytics and personalized services. More information at AdvisaUSA.com.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
1222. It's Midday Matters on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. With me in studio, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel, Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at IPFW, and with us by phone, it's Leonard Williams, political science professor from Manchester University. And of course, we want you to get in touch with us this hour. If you have a question about the Indiana legislative session so far, the number 260-452-1185. Toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Earlier in the program, we talked with Representative Martin Carbaugh, Republican representing District 81 here in the Fort Wayne area. With us by phone now, it's Phil Giaquinta, Representative Phil Giaquinta, I should say, a Democrat representing District 80 in Fort Wayne. Representative, thanks so much for taking time for us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Sean. Appreciate it.
Now, we heard earlier from Representative Carbaugh, the Republicans, of course, have a supermajority in this session. Yet we've heard we've also heard a lot of a much less contentious session than we have had the last few years. Can you tell us about kind of the feeling in Indianapolis in the State House right now?
Well, that's probably a good assessment. I suppose the fact that that there is this, you know, supposed super majority, I just sort of like to just say that I don't know if there's a big difference between a super majority and just a regular old majority, other than the fact those of us in the minority, we have to coordinate when we want to caucus and things like that, obviously, because you can do business now with without having us on the floor, which is you know, still a big deal. But I do think that there has been more cooperation, and I've always said this, down here in Indianapolis among Democrats and Republicans in the time that I've been here, and probably maybe frankly even more so before I got here than what led to believe or things that you might read, well, you know, I suppose what's happening in Washington, D.C. But having said that, yeah, the issues that we face, and obviously in the last couple of years, are not there now this time, and things have been going going a lot better.
Bob Kaler.
So, Phil, it seems at a distance, it looks to me as if the Republicans in this giant majority that they have are disagreeing about enough things to represent two parties on their own. Are Democrats in a position to strategically align with some faction of the Republicans on some issue, or is that just, you know, three-dimensional chess that's beyond everybody's ken?
Yeah, I mean, Bob, I don't think we're sort of huddling over there with a group, to be honest with you. I think it's I think our job is to get up to the microphone, present our case as to why a bill is good or bad, and maybe how we can improve it on it. So I don't think we're, you know, sort of, you know, identifying 30 Republicans and teaming up with them just to kill bills. But on the other hand, I think we've done a pretty good job of making the case. In fact, I'm and Andy, you know where I sit down here in my office with, you know, four other legislators, and including Representative Battles, who's an educator and on the Education Committee. And I've seen a couple Republicans, new freshmen, have come in and have talked to Representative Battles about some of the education issues and just trying to get a grasp of what's going on. So it's been, you know, interesting and sort of fun to share our ideas and our criticisms, and again, how we can maybe improve bills. And we've seen some bills get better, and we've seen some defeated. So we feel like we're doing our job.
So, Representative Giaquinta, in the end, you still want to get some legislation passed, but when you're in the super minority, when you're in the minority, let alone the super minority, it's a little harder to get your bills assigned to the good committees and get time in the committees. How are you going about actually getting some legislation moving through? Because you have been able to do that a little bit.
Yeah, House Bill, for example, House Bill 1270, it originally was passed, or the language was passed around 6-7 years ago regarding housing TIF area. It designated 150 acres for housing TIF area, basically. Any improvements made to the area stays within the district, and the city uses that money then for in that particular area. And it's distressed neighborhoods. They use that money for sidewalks and those sorts of improvements, streetscapes and those sorts of things. And then the builders come in and renovate and rebuild the homes. And it basically, it's Renaissance Point that I'm talking about. And we would like to further expand that, or potentially the city wants to go to another part of the city and do the same thing. And so the bill just basically expands that to an additional 150 acres. So what I did was talk to Representative Carball. I know he was on the show earlier. He's one of my co-authors, along with Representatives Lehman and Leonard. All three of these gentlemen touch the city. We all have part of the city of Fort Wayne in the district. And Representative Carball frankly did his homework, went to did a tour of Renaissance Point, saw the value in the housing TIF district itself, and has, you know, then agreed to be my co-author. So, you know, you got to be smart about these things, learn who's the, you know, I realize what the numbers are. And so it's good to have Republicans on the bill, and frankly, I'm not going to get a bill out without that. And in the end, that's probably not a bad thing anyway.
Well, you kind of took that approach even when you're in the majority. You think that's the right way to do it if you're looking to deal with a chamber that happens to be on the other party's control anyway.
Well, and, you know, frankly, it's going to go to the Senate. And if the Senate's controlled by when the Democrats had the House, Republicans, you know, had the Senate. So they're going to look for Republican, you know, co-sponsors on a bill. You're right. I did the same thing. And with some pretty good success.
Representative, I know you're busy and have to get going here. Do you have 2 minutes to take a question from one of our listeners?
Oh, sure.
All right. Let's see if we can get Carrie on the line here. Carrie, can you hear us okay? Carrie, are you there?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Oh, it's Carrie, but that's okay.
That's all right. You're on the air with Representative Phil Giaquinta.
My statement is, and I don't know if you've devoted a program to this yet or not, and if you have, I missed it, and I apologize, but the Medicaid expansion. The bottom line is, for 3 years, all of the Indiana taxpayers have already paid for it through their Indiana, through their federal taxes. And it seems to me that it's not getting anywhere. I know that many legislators say we've got a wonderful program here. They want the federal government to expand it, but we don't have a wonderful program here when we have a wait list and it's underfunded, as our current CHIP program is. I don't think we should be giving money back to residents of Indiana via Indiana taxes when we have programs that we can't fund properly. People qualify for this program. They cannot get the benefits. If you set up criteria for qualifications, then you should put the money into getting these benefits. But back to Medicaid expansion, through our federal dollars, we're already paying for it. We get sick and tired of sending our federal dollars to D.C. and don't see it come back here. The IRS is not going to say, oh, those people in Indiana don't want the Medicaid expansion. I guess we'll reduce their taxes. Doesn't happen.
Carrie, there's a whole lot to that. If it's okay, let me put that to Representative Giaquinta here. Representative, this has been obviously, I mean, a highlighted issue for several years now, and now what we're seeing, well, legislatures across the country really take this up.
Exactly, and you're seeing states with Republican governors, frankly, adopting the Medicaid expansion. Certainly Michigan, Ohio, Florida, and Carrie, I thought she did an excellent job of sort of laying out how it works. And there are also many more benefits, not only to ensuring those that we have 400,000 folks in Indiana that don't have insurance, but certainly the other side benefits, creation of additional 30,000 jobs for the state of Indiana. And all kinds of things. You know, the stats that I read and the information that you read about bankruptcies that would come down as a result. These are studies that have been going on for years, but bankruptcies that would go down because of people are able to pay their health insurance bills. You know, less visits to the ER because people are then being proactive about their health care. So there's all kinds of good reasons to do this. It's frankly it's the law of the land. I think Governor Pence, they want to. They just frankly probably don't want to be tied into a quote federal program. That's probably something that they're going to have to realize and sort of let go of that that idea, because he's talking about block grants and so on, and I think that's the bill that's coming over from the Senate. So we'll just kind of have to see how this thing plays out. We will, our side will continue to do best to make our case as to why Indiana should adopt this and move forward on it.
Well, when my legislator sent a survey to my house, and it states, do you support an increase of the, no, it says, will you support raising your taxes to support the Obamacare Medicaid expansion, it was very misleading. So therefore, people probably respond and say no. Well, but we already are paying for the first 3 years. Even if you just adopted the first 3 years, there's been gross miscalculation of how much it costs in Indiana, the cost of Indiana. The best one out there is the Kaiser Foundation, which is a nonpartisan thing that they've come through.
Gary, I'm sorry we have to interrupt you and leave it there for now. Representative Giaquinta is already over the time we asked him for. We appreciate your call, though, and Representative Phil Giaquinta, we appreciate your time as well.
Sean, if you ever want to devote an hour to the healthcare issue, Medicaid expansion, have me on then, and we'll be happy to talk more about it because it's very interesting. Goes in, you know, there's a lot more detail to talk about, and but I'd be happy to talk about it. But I appreciate y'all having me on, and thank you very much.
And we certainly will. Thanks so much again for your time. We do need to take a quick break for the news here. When we return, we'll continue the conversation with Andy Downs and Leonard Williams. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch with us and share your questions and comments. 260-452-1185. Toll free, 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
Silence, ceremony, and highly anticipated puffs of smoke. This week in Rome, a papal election gets underway.
The cardinals recognize this is the most important thing they will ever do in their lives.
And one of those cardinals will exit the Sistine Chapel wearing white. The mysterious process of picking a pope. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News. That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOI News. Activists taking photos or videos of potentially illegal or embarrassing practices at farms and factories could be subject to new criminal penalties under legislation approved by the Senate. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
A measure authored by Markle Republican Senator Travis Holdman makes it a crime for anyone to videotape or photograph agricultural or industrial operations and share those photos with the public in an attempt to harm or defame the business. Opponents say efforts the bill is trying to outlaw have led to significant changes at animal farms in states like California and Ohio. Environmental groups say the public relies on that kind of whistleblower activity. But Holdman says his bill doesn't prevent people from reporting wrongdoing.
Anybody is excluded that does this as long as they turn over the videotape or the photograph to law enforcement or a regulatory agency that would have oversight of that operation within 48 hours.
But Hoosier Environmental Council Policy Director Kim Ferraro says if the activity being videotaped or photographed isn't yet illegal, law enforcement can't help, and turning to regulatory agencies isn't always the answer.
Whether it be due to lack of political will or lack of resources, they are oftentimes complicit in the activity, know about it, and simply are looking the other way.
Ferraro says there are other penalties, including trespassing, that can prevent people with bad intent from encroaching on farms and factories without punishing whistleblowers. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
Indiana State School Superintendent met with local legislators, teachers, and parents this weekend to talk about the help she needs from the legislature to advance education. Indiana Public Broadcasting Stephanie Weekman reports that Ritz found support from the crowd about changing school testing in Indiana.
While Hoosier students are in classrooms this spring taking the ISTEP Plus exam, State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz is trying to find a better way to measure student success.
You asked me today for the reading levels of the students of Indiana. I could give you zero information because we don't collect it. We don't know the actual level performance of any student in Indiana with our state test. We just know whether they passed or failed a non-grade level test.
Ritz says the statewide skills test also does not show individual student progress for math. Ritz says she wants less testing in classrooms and targeted the iRead 3 exam that her predecessor Tony Bennett began giving to third grade students last year.
Elementary teachers, teachers of reading, they know how to assess reading when they're working right there with the kids. I don't need to give them a test.
Ritz also tried to gain support for her other top priorities. One, the repeal of the state's A to F school grading system, she says has support from the state legislature. The other, opposing the expansion of the voucher program, may be a tough battle for her office to fight at the State House. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Stephanie Weekman in Anderson.
Supporters of Indiana's charter school and private school voucher programs are planning a State House rally during which they'll hear from Republican Governor Mike Pence. The noontime rally today, sponsored by School Choice Indiana and other groups, come as the legislature is considering a proposal that would expand what is already the nation's largest voucher program. Indiana is spending about $36 million on subsidies for low and moderate income families to send about 9,100 children to private schools this year. A bill already approved by the Indiana House this year would expand the program by allowing kindergartners and some other children to be eligible without first spending a year in public schools. You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne. Now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
It's 12:38. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Midday Matters on Monday, March 11th. Thanks very much for being with us this hour. Joining me in studio, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel, Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at IPFW, and Leonard Williams, political science professor at Manchester University. Over the course of this hour, we're talking about the 2013 legislative session. We want to hear from you. Do you have questions or comments about what's going on in Indianapolis so far? Give us a call. Get in touch. 260-452-1185. Toll free, 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Leonard Williams, I'd like to get your voice in on the conversation here. And we just heard from Democrat and Republican representatives from our listening area here in Northeast Indiana. I want your assessment on the session so far. Any big surprises, anything as you've been following it that's been particularly, I guess, noteworthy in this budget session?
I think the first thing to note is what both representatives have mentioned, is that this is a much less contentious, quarrelsome kind of session. The big thing for me would be to try to figure out why, and certainly as Representative Carbaugh mentioned, the leadership of both the House and the Senate have worked very hard at trying to bring people together and not make this a kind of session where there's a great deal of name-calling and finger-pointing. I think it may be due as well to the fact that we don't really have a fiscal situation where we're trying to figure out how to spend declining resources. We have a little extra cushion, as many states do this year, and that makes it easier for folks to agree on more things.
Agree on more things, at least within the chambers, perhaps. But there is this ongoing, not a feud exactly, but disagreement about where some of this money should go between the State House or the House and Senate and the governor's office.
Absolutely, and I think that's another remarkable thing about this session is that the debates have become less between the parties and more within the Republican Party itself, between the two branches of government, the governor and the legislature.
Andy Downs.
So, Leonard, do you think that the legislature was making an overt attempt to sort of reassert itself after having a fairly strong Republican governor in Mitch Daniels, that they said, hey, it's time for us to remind everybody we're co-equal here and perhaps even more powerful, depending on how you look at the power structures?
Certainly, I think that kind of reassertion would happen, particularly when you have a new governor who is coming not from within state politics, but from Washington, as with Governor Pence. Another factor, I think, as well, is the fact that people have felt a lot of budgetary pressure from constituents. You see that, for example, in education, where during the Daniels administration, we lost about 3% of the funding for K-12. And now that the economy is a little bit better, people are saying, well, maybe it's time to go back and refund those priorities that we've had for some time.
We're talking about the 2013 Indiana legislative session, and we want our listeners to get in touch with us this hour, 260-452-1185, toll-free at 800-471-9264 if you have a question or comment for Andy Downs or Leonard Williams this hour. Andy, I want to put kind of a similar question to you, too. It seems reasonably remarkable to me, actually, that this 10% tax cut is such a dividing line between those branches of government. Power structure aside, even party aside a bit, Pence campaigned very strongly on this issue, and as things stand, there just isn't a lot of support for it.
This is one of those times when I think we have to ask ourselves the difference between being term limited and not, and what the effects might be. So Mike Pence is, obviously he's serving 4 years, and perhaps he wants to serve four more after that, or maybe there's some other office he wants to run for, but he's looking
You're talking about the presidency.
I did not say that, but somebody else might say that. So if he's looking to run for something else, he needs, especially if he wants to do that in 2016, he has to have some successes to point to early on so that he can say, see, look what I did in this state. However, the legislators, a number of them are people who've been there for many, many years or even have family histories that go back decades in the chambers. So they're taking a sort of longer term view. And even some of them are maybe rethinking the wisdom of putting the property tax caps actually in the Constitution. They're looking at some revenue issues that are affecting local governments in ways that they realize now are going to be kind of complicated. And so they want to be a little cautious and make sure that the hills and valleys they have seen over time, we don't cut our taxes in such a way that it leaves us in a bind later on. We all saw them regretting, in many respects, the automatic tax rebate that they passed a few years ago, because when we hit it a lot faster than anyone expected, some of them almost immediately said, well, wait, we didn't really mean we want to give that back to you. What we really meant was we want to pay down some pensions and hold on to a little more of this. So I think that's kind of the difference here. There's a governor who is term limited. Maybe he has other aspirations, so he wants to get some things done quickly. He did campaign very hard on this. And then you have legislators who've seen a longer term view of things and, you know, are maybe a little gun shy at this moment to want to do something this, some would say, severe.
Leonard Williams, do you think Governor Pence maybe overestimated the power of the governor's mansion, I guess you could call it, coming from the legislative side of the coin, so to speak?
Certainly, he's facing a lot more opposition from the legislature than he would from his own caucus in Washington. It's pretty clear that the jobs are very different. Being a legislator requires much more bargaining and negotiation, and you're used to getting your way when you're running your own office, your own committee staff. Governor Pence, I think, is realizing that Indianapolis is a bit different than Washington, D.C., maybe.
Before we move away from the budget issue and the tax cut, Andy, I want to put this to you. We heard it earlier in the program, Americans for Prosperity going to start running ads favoring the governor's tax cuts. A big money group getting involved in state politics in a non-election year.
I think that's something we see more and more often in states, not just in election years, but also in years that push policies. Because a lot of these groups form because of policy interests, not because of necessarily electoral politics only. So that's not, I don't think that's that surprising. We don't usually see it this broadly in Indiana. But it's not something that's completely unprecedented either, that we haven't seen either pieces of direct mail or heard radio commercials, those sorts of things. There also is a connection between the governor's office and somebody who works on his staff and a member of the Prosperity Group. So there are some who are saying that's the reason Indiana's getting a little more attention. They're able to play on some past relationships as a way to get the advertising here. But, you know, if you're an interest group and you form because you believe something should happen, then you really ought to be pushing it not just during election years, but all year round.
We're going to take just a quick break here, and we'll talk more about the 2013 legislative session. If you want to get in touch, if you have a question or comment for Leonard Williams or Andy Downs, give us a call, 260-452-1185. Toll-free, 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Stay with us. More to come.
Scientists are creating pigs that can grow organs for human transplant, goats that produce valuable protein-rich milk, and also are altering mouse genes to trace genetic deformities.
There's a mouse that has tusks like an elephant might have.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Emily Anthes about her new book, Frankenstein's Cat, Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beasts. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
In the week ahead on Talk of the Nation, Drs. Michael Bostwick and Robert DuPont weigh the pros and cons of prescribing medical marijuana. And Bob Garfield joins us to talk about branding, social media, and his new book, Can't Buy Me Like. I'm Lynn Neary, all that and more with Neil Conan in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Silence, ceremony, and highly anticipated puffs of smoke. This week in Rome, a papal election gets underway.
The cardinals recognize this is the most important thing they will ever do in their lives.
And one of those cardinals will exit the Sistine Chapel wearing white. The mysterious process of picking a pope. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News. That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel, Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics, and political science professor Leonard Williams from Manchester University. And we want to hear from you this hour. If you have a question or comment about the 2013 legislative session, give us a call, 260-452-1185, toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Leonard Williams, we're going to, in just a few moments, take a look ahead to what to expect from the second half of the session here. But another of the big issues we're seeing come up at the State House again, and we've seen it the last few years, really, is education. We've heard folks wanting to repeal the Common Core standards. Glenda Ritz, of course, has been touring the state, talking with folks about her policies and trying to drum up some support. What's been remarkable to you on the education front so far in this session?
Well, the most important thing, I think, is that the legislative leadership in both houses is committed to expanding the amount of funds for education, to expand full-day kindergarten, to provide more assistance to individual school districts. coming back again off years in which education had been cut back by the state during its budgetary sessions, returning to an era when money flows in that direction is quite a change.
And I believe we're looking also at another expansion of the voucher program that was so controversial for a time under Tony Bennett. Lawmakers looking at getting rid of the 1 year in public school requirement for certain students. Do you expect that'll get through the legislature?
I think so. It seems like there has been substantial support within the legislature for that approach. And that's true despite the fact that the legislature originally backed off its efforts to try to limit the power of the state superintendent and tried to restrict her ability to make policy. So I think on that front, you see the legislature kind of moving in a couple of different directions. On the one hand, trying to assert its authority, and on the other hand, allowing the executive branch to do what they need to do.
I find that issue to be kind of interesting since Ball State in their poll, their Hoosier survey, for I believe it is 2 years in a row now, have asked a question about expansion of voucher program. And obviously it doesn't get into the subtleties of what legislation does, but there does not seem to be a broad interest in expanding that. Yet the legislature, as Leonard's pointed out, seems to have an awful lot of support for doing just that. So I think this might be one of those instances where legislators actually do sort of take a look at the big picture and decide what they think is in the best interest of the people as a whole, even if it may end up conflicting with what constituents might be saying.
Andy Downs, Glenda Ritz, before the turn of the year, a lot of folks were interested to see whether or not she would retain the same amount of power, I suppose you could call it, as Tony Bennett, who's now, of course, in Florida. What's your brief evaluation of Glenda Ritz's performance so far, how she's being accepted by the governor and by the legislature and by the people of Indiana?
Well, I do think that Leonard's pointed out something that's very true. There were some early rumblings that there were going to be attempts to take a lot of power away from her, and I think in a show of separation of powers or respecting the separation of powers, there wasn't a lot of that that's actually taken place. And so I think that's a good thing. That's healthy for democracy in general. I think that the public seems to be finding her to be, an interesting and approachable individual, much more willing to have a conversation, a little less combative than Tony Bennett was. And I think those are good things. She still has an awful lot of work to do and a General Assembly that is not on her side on several issues. But what's interesting is they've actually gone looking for places where they do share some common ground, for example, vocational training. And so that's once again a sign that perhaps in some places legislators are not able to work with the executive branch or with each other, but in Indiana on some issues we still can.
Bob Kaler.
There's a move in the Senate more than in the House to do a few things to prop up the gambling industry in Indiana, to allow some gambling on land-based casinos and to add new games at the racetracks, that sort of thing. What's your read on how the politics of that will cut? Because I think it crosses party lines quite a bit, but that's certainly a place where social conservatives and even some liberals as well gang up on that as an issue.
Leonard Williams.
Oh, thanks for asking me that question.
There was a pool here, Leonard, and you lost.
Apparently. Talk about the expansion of gambling. The way I see it is I don't see this as highly a partisan issue, but much more of an economic development issue. Those counties where gambling revenues have become an important part of their local economies are going to see considerable competition from neighboring states, and that's what I think is really driving the whole issue. And so in many respects, those legislators, regardless of their party, regardless of their personal views, are going to say, look, we need to do something in order to keep the money flowing into the state and flowing into these towns and cities.
And in the interest of fairness here, Andy Downs, let's put you on the spot as well.
Oh, but we have to take time to compliment that deaf performance on the pop quiz. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I think one of the things we need to keep in mind is that part of the reason the casino, the gambling originally was around the outside edge of the state, and that was so that we could get revenue from the people living in those other states. And so as Michigan and Ohio and Illinois have added gaming, that has cut into the revenue here in Indiana. So there's a question, have we become so reliant on this revenue that we have to figure out a way to either maintain or continue to increase it as it had for many, many years? Or do we take the approach that this was, we had a good run with the money, we accept now that it will continue to go down, and we look for other ways to replace that revenue? I think that's part of the question that has to be answered here. And this does cut across party lines, very easily cuts across party lines. There are some who, when we first said, let's regulate gambling, they said, no, you know what we ought to do? Once we decide that we're going to go with gambling, we charge a fee for people to enter or some such thing. And other than that, we don't regulate a darn thing about it and just let the market do what the market will do. Other people said, no, you have to regulate the heck out of it or it will run rampant. You find people in both parties, both ends of the political spectrum, who are opposed to or in favor of this particular form of revenue. But we've got to figure out something because it is a revenue source that's drying up.
Just 2 minutes left in the program here. I want to take a look ahead. We're just beyond halfway through this 2013 session. And Leonard Williams, let's start with you. What are you going to be watching the closest as we move ahead with the session here?
I think first and foremost, you'll want to see what happens to the governor's proposed tax cut, whether the pressure from Americans for Prosperity actually bears any fruit. A second thing that I would be paying attention to is to see what happens to some of the social issues that haven't received as much play but are still very much live issues, things related to drug testing for welfare recipients, for example, the ultrasound issue on abortion. Those kinds of things.
And Andy Downs.
Clearly the budget. I think we'd all would say that was probably number one, and certainly what dominates the long session. Beyond that, I still look at the dynamics of the session. In other words, how will the speaker handle through the rest of the session the supermajority that he has? We already know how the president pro tem does. He's had that for a little while. Now we get to watch how the speaker does.
I want to thank all of our guests for joining us. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of this Midday Matters program. But Leonard Williams, a political science professor at Manchester University, thanks so much for being with us on the program today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it very much.
And Andy Downs, director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at IPFW. Always appreciate you joining us on the program.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks also to Bob Kaler and Representatives Martin Carbaugh and Phil Giaquinta for their time. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1 and streaming online at NIPR.FM. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Stay with us. Fresh Air with your local host, Katie Anderson, is coming up next. It's 1 o'clock. Have a great day.